We're in the 47th chapter of Isaiah tonight. Before we begin our study, let me go back and just review briefly what this section is all about. The section is made up of nine chapters, chapters 40 through 48. Chapter 40 was an introduction to this whole latter part of the book, in which God presents His incomparable greatness. There is nothing with which you can compare Jehovah. He is the creator of all things. He sits above the circle of the earth. Princes, they come up and He blows upon them and they're gone. He is greater than all the idols because they're non-entities. And when an individual finds himself in a state of maybe despondency, or when things are going bad for him, he's in captivity, as they will be, then look up at the stars, and as you notice them, there's not a one lacking from night to night. That was to indicate that God was concerned about His people. In beginning with 41 on through 48, these eight chapters, God is challenging the idols. He's challenging them to do something as over against what He's willing to do. Now in this challenge against the idols, God is willing to rest His whole claim to deity on the fact that He can foretell the end from the beginning. So He calls upon the idols to do something. Now, He then has already told them in the 39th chapter in verse 6 that they are going into Babylonian captivity sometime. It would be some years before they went, but they would go there. Now, He begins to prepare them for that on the ground that He is God. There is no other God. He is able to look after them in captivity. He is able to bring back a remnant and ultimately fulfill His purpose in selecting the Jews. Now, in doing that, He has introduced Cyrus. He mentions him some several times, and we have him again tonight. He's going to raise up Cyrus, the Persian who ruled over Medo-Persia, and He will use him to take Babylon and to let the children of Israel come back home. Now, this is what he should, but beyond that, all of that will be a guarantee that ultimately He will bring His servant, who will be His son, into the world as the spiritual redeemer. So we're looking now at a Babylonian captivity and a return from that under Cyrus. And beyond that, we're looking at man's captivity in sin and his redemption from that through the servant. Now this is the thought of the chapters. Now in chapters 47 and 48, he now shows here, he already shown back in the 14th chapter, he dealt with Babylon and the ultimate end of the Babylonian kings, how great they thought they were, but they were all brought down. So we dealt with that. Then in the 46th chapter, which we had last Wednesday night, he deals that with the Babylonian gods, Bel and Nebo, and shows that they have to be born on beasts or on the shoulders, and so instead of them bearing the people bear them. But in contrast, Jehovah bears His people, they don't bear Him. That was our lesson last time. Now, in our lesson tonight, beginning with chapter 47, now he deals with the ultimate fall of Babylon. The Babylon will be brought low, brought down to the dust. And then in the 48th chapter, he deals there with Cyrus and Babylon for the last time. Doesn't mention them anymore. So we turn now to 47. And what's the lesson to us? The lesson to us is, class, that God rules in the kingdom of men. And a nation can only become so corrupt, and God always brings it to its knees. And we can learn that lesson. We should learn it. But in the midst of whatever may come, God is always concerned about His people. That doesn't mean that we won't suffer along with the conditions and the tragedies of the time. We will. But God will be concerned about His people and will ultimately bring them to victory in the consummation of His call. Now this to me is a great lesson of the book of Isaiah, and especially this section we're in now. But come down and sit in the dust, O virgin daughter of Babylon. Sit on the ground without a throne, O daughter of the Chaldeans, for thou shalt no more be called tender and delicate. Now when he speaks of Babylon here as a virgin, he's not talking about her purity, but he means that she's never been, since she became a great power, she's never been humble, she's never been brought down to the dust. just as it speaks of the Virgin of Israel. Virgin Israel, the Virgin Jerusalem. Doesn't mean they were holy or anything like that. It means they haven't been humbled, haven't been brought down, but they will. They will be. And so this is what it means by this statement. You'll not be called tender and delicate anymore. Take the millstone and grind meal. Remove thy veil. Strip off the train. Uncover the leg. Pass through the river. In other words, now from your place of greatness, you're going to become captive and you'll become slaves. And this idea here of grinding meal was the work of a slave. You're going to become enslaved. And the other, strip off the train, uncover the leg, pass through the river. That means that you're going to pass through the river of captivity. Into captivity, you'll be carried away, is the idea of that thought. So we declare that they're going to be carried off. Thy nakedness shall be uncovered. Yea, thy shame shall be seen. I will take vengeance and will spare no man. God's going to bring Babylon down to the ground. And when you show the nakedness, that is, the nakedness, when he uncovers the city there and they see the real nakedness of the city, when their booty is carried away. It's the idea of that thought. Now he moves on now. Our Redeemer Jehovah of hosts is his name, the Holy One of Israel. Now over against that, our Redeemer is Jehovah. Now Jehovah will bring Babylon down, as he said in the 44th and 5th chapter, he did it by Cyrus. Now when he brings them down, Jehovah will be our Redeemer. He will be the one who will deliver us. Alright? Sit thou silent and get thee into darkness, O daughter of the Chaldean. Now Chaldea was the nation, Babylon was the capital. So when we speak of the Chaldeans or the Babylonians, we're talking about the same people. So now then here that Babylon is going to be brought down. Chaldea will no more be what she was. So sit thou silent and get thee into darkness, O daughter of the Chaldeans, and of the people of Chaldea, for thou shalt no more be called the mistress of kingdoms. That is the lady, the reigning lady, the ruling queen of nations. You're not going to be called that anymore. I was wroth with my people. I profaned mine inheritance and gave them into thy hand. Thou didst show them no mercy. Upon the aged hast thou very heavily laid thy yoke. Now, because of God's indignation and anger at the idolatry and the wickedness of his people and how that they had treated him, that he allowed them to be carried into Babylonian captivity. Now, remember, Isaiah is prophesying that around 700 B.C., they didn't go into captivity until 586 B.C., over 100 years, 110 or 15 years later. But God is speaking of it as though it has already occurred. He's calling the things that are not as though they are. Paul said to the Romans that God does that. God calls the things that are not as though they are. For when God has determined that a thing is going to be done, it is as if it's already done. Now, he'll take his time in doing it, but I have declared you're going into Babylon. So you're going. I have declared the destruction and the fall of Babylon and your return, and that's going to be fulfilled. So God has declared, now remember his statement, I declare the end from the beginning. Now, and he's resting, he claims the deity, sole deity, the only God, on his power to foretell the end from the beginning, and that's what he's doing now. He's telling what's going to happen is already happened. So he's going to bring it to pass. And he already does. And so he's never man who died to show them no mercy. Upon the aged hast thou very heavily laid thy yoke. In other words, there was no feeling for fellow human beings. There was that's one of the issues in the world today, is the idea of treatment of people and the concern for people and all that. And you see, they didn't have it back there either. And thou saidest, I shall be mistress forever. So that thou didst not lay these things to thy heart, neither didst remember the latter end of thy art. Well, you've said I'll be a mistress forever. You have not taken into consideration the fact that you're dealing with God and not man. Well, I think the same thing is true of the nations of today. Nations of today do not take into consideration the fact that they're dealing with God and not with man. They're dealing with God. He is the ruler of the kings of the earth. He determines the bounds and the appointed season of a nation, the bounds of the habitation, the appointed season. God does that. Well, we're learning that. I've said it enough, and I know it's impressed you by now. I'm sure it has. But we need to remember that. All right? Now, further, he goes on to say here in this, you didn't lay it to heart. Now, therefore, hear this. Thou that art given to pleasures, that sitteth securely, that says in thy heart, I am, and there's none else besides thee. I shall not sit as a widow, neither shall I know the loss of children. Now God's answer to that, but these two things shall come to thee in a moment, in one day. The loss of children and widowhood, in their full measure shall they come upon thee, in the multitude of thy sorceries, and the great abundance of thine enchantments. Now notice the boast of Babylon. I don't know if she literally said that. I'm sure she didn't. But that's her boast. That she's great, she's powerful, she's going to, everything's fine, she's going to live forever, she's going to continue to be mistress of the world, the leading power in the world. God said, I'm going to bring you down. Well, we have been that, we think that we're going to continue to be that, and I don't know how long we'll last, but it's not going to be indefinitely. Time will come when God's going to do the same thing for us, because we have left God out of our thinking. We become proud, we're proud of our military power and our wealth and all these things, but just a snap of his finger or a breath from his mouth, God can bring all that to an end. We know that. We believe that. I think, I hope we do. Trust that we do. Now he goes on to say then, you say that. You say you'll not sit a widow. You'll not lose children. Now that's just a figure of speech. In other words, you're not going to be brought down. You're going to stay in that great power. Now notice he says further here, and notice that last verse there, and widowhood in their full measure shall they come upon thee in the multitude of thy sorceries and the great abundance of thine enchantments. Now that is, she had trusted in her idols, she had trusted in her sorceries, and you trusted in those who claimed to declare the future and all of that, sorceries and the whole full measure of widowhood and all that will come upon you there. Right? And now notice next, for thou hast trusted in thy wickedness. Thou hast said, none seeth me. Thy wisdom and thy knowledge, it hath perverted thee. And thou hast said in thy heart, I am, and there's none else beside me. Pride goeth before destruction, and a haughty spirit before fall. Said the proverb. How true that is. Well, all right. Therefore shall evil come upon thee. Now, notice that's her boast. Therefore shall evil come upon thee. Thou shalt not know the dawning thereof, and mischief shall fall upon thee. Thou shalt not be able to put it away, and desolation shall come upon thee suddenly, which thou knowest not. Oh, how quickly a thing, how this nation has gone down the last 50 years. Just in my own lifetime, the 50 years of it, and your lifetime, most of it, how it has gone down. And it could be swept away. In a generation or a decade, we think we may boast of our greatness and our power and our wealth and all of that. But when God says the judgment's come, it's come. And this is a thing we must never forget. Well, all right. Now, notice, stand now with thine enchantments and with the multitude of thy sorceries, wherein thou hast labored from thy youth. If so be, thou shalt be able to profit. If so be, thou mayest prevail. Now notice that. Now these men that were these so-called sorcerers, and I think that meant the individuals who ruled the heavens or declared from the heavens what was going to come and enchanted and all that. Now these individuals, they didn't do that for entertainment. We like to watch sleight of hand things for entertainment. And we sometimes read some of the astrology for entertainment. But there's nothing to it at all. But these men were in earnest. They were dead earnest. They really worked at this thing. That's what he said. You know what he said. Stand now with the multitude of your sorcerers, wherein thou labored from thy youth. If so be, thou shalt be able to profit. If see, so be, thou may prevail. Right? Now, you trusted in these things. Now, you worked hard at it. But can it prevail? No. I didn't pay much attention to it. I was so disgusted with it. These folks here all over the world called two stars got lined up. You know why they've been a meeting and all that, and their peace is going to come because that's astrology, and that's the very thing that God said he would bring to naught, and he would confuse them and all that. Well, yeah, people are looking for anything on earth except God. They're willing to trust in stars. They're willing to trust in planets. They're willing to trust in necromancer and all that sort of anything but God. And God is the only one that can control anything. Did you know, y'all see those folks on television out there? And how'd that make you feel? You wish I'd take one of them? No, sir. I felt two ways. I was sort of sorry for them and disgusted with them. If they looked at the Bible, it wouldn't have been there. I was sorry for them because of the ignorance and what they bound up with and all that sort of thing. I feel sorry for folks like that. Yet they don't have any patience with the ignorance because it's not necessary. But turn to the Bible and learn if you want to. Now notice what he says here. Thou art wearied in the multitude of thy counsels. Let now the astrologers, that is, that word literally means the dividers of the heavens, the astrologers, the stargazers, the monthly prognosticators. Now there are three different groups now. All of them must look at the stars that divide the heavens here and the clouds there. The clouds divide and they see messages in that. Here the stars line up and they get a message out of that. And yet at the first of the new moon, while they began to declare what's going to happen here and all of that, now these and the monthly prognosticators stand up and save thee from the things that shall come upon thee. Now let them stand up and save thee. Let these fellows watching those planets the other night, maybe still be, I don't know. But let them stand up now and let those stars that you're talking about, let it save us from war and guarantee peace. Nonsense. Behold, they shall be as stubble. The fire shall burn them. That is your counselors here and your astrologers and your stargazers and your monthly prognosticators. They shall be as stubble. The fire shall burn them. They shall not deliver themselves from the power of the flame. Now as the flame of judgment comes, or even those fellows were telling you about all that, they won't be able to deliver themselves. The idols won't be able to deliver themselves. None of these things will be so. It shall not be a coal to warm at, nor a fire to set before it. It won't be something just to warm you, and something, a coal that will cook your meal on. It's going to be a devouring fire. When that judgment of God comes, it'll be a devouring fire that will sweep you away. And that's the way it's going to happen. Thus shall the things be unto thee wherein thou hast labored. They that have trafficked with thee from thy youth shall wander everyone to his quarter. There shall be none to save thee. Now, all of these people have been made rich by trafficking and trading with Babylon. Now when Babylon's siege comes and if she falls, there won't be a one of them to help her out. Not a one. And she'll be there alone. Well, same thing of the Babylon over in Revelation. Babylon's an interesting thing. If you ever notice from beginning to end, over in chapter 11 of Genesis, where they built that tower of Babel there, it was to get away from God. It was to reach up heaven by their own means. And that Babel became Babylon. Babylon was located there. And then you come on over here in the midst of the Bible. We're still dealing with Babylon as the symbol of that which is ungodly and worldly and against God. Then you come to Revelation 17 and 18. Now you have Babylon again, the symbol of Rome, who was the Babylon of that particular period. And again, God judges it, and it goes down. So from Genesis to Revelation, you have your conflict here with the Babel or the Babels or the Babylons of time. And they all go down in destruction. God destroys them all. So that's what you do, still do it. Well, that's interesting to me. That's a great chapter. And now he goes on. Now he turns to the people, the Jews themselves, and he criticizes their hypocrisy. Now, no, hear ye this, O house of Jacob, who are called by the name of Israel, and are come forth out of the waters of Judah, who swear by the name of Jehovah, and make mention of the God of Israel, but not in truth, nor in righteousness. Analyze, let's look at it for a moment. Now, he called upon to hear this. Hear ye this. Now, first, O house of Jacob. Jacob meant supplanter. That was Jacob's first name. Who are called by the name of Israel, that is, those who wrestle with God and prevail. That is, they're princes of God. Right? But you say you're one thing, but you're really something else. You're just a bunch of hypocrites. But you go by the name of Israel and are come forth out of the waters of Judah. That is, Judah is the headwaters from which the nation of Judah has come now after the tearing away of the 10 tribes, who swear by the name of Jehovah and make mention of the God of Israel, but not in truth, not in righteousness. Now that's hypocrisy. So here to claim to be Israel, but you're a supplanter, to claim here to swear by God that you don't mean it. Here then to act according to him and not in righteousness and truth is hypocrisy. And that's the charge that God's making of his people. You're hypocrites here. Now notice, brother. For they call themselves of the holy city and stay themselves upon the God of Israel. Oh yes, we belong to Jerusalem, the holy city. And that's our headquarters. And notice further here, and God is our stay, he's our support. God is our support. Jehovah of hosts is his name. Now notice what God says. I have declared the former things from of old. Yea, they went forth out of my mouth, and I showed them. Suddenly I did them, and they came to pass. I don't know just what he has in mind there, but let's go back. We're going back there. God said he would bring a flood, and he did. He called Abraham and told him to go down to this land, and I'll make you a great nation, and he did. He said, you're going to go down into Egypt, but I'm going to bring you out of Egypt. I'll bring you to Sinai. I'll give you this land. He gave it to them. Then he said, if you don't do what's right, I'll send you out. I'll bring the adversaries upon you. And he did. And on, you can go back and see what all God has done according to what he said he would do. What I said I would do, I did them, and they came to pass. Because I knew that thou art obstinate, and thy neck is an iron sinew, and thy brow brass. Now look at that. You're obstinate, your neck is iron, instead of being a muscle, it's iron, and your brow is brass, you're hard-headed, stiff-necked, and obstinate in your conduct. Right now, I know that. And because I know that, I'm telling you what I've done and I did it, and I'm telling you what I'm going to do, so that you may know when it comes to pass that I did it and your idols didn't do it. The idol didn't have anything to do it. I did it myself. But I'm telling you now so you'll know that when it comes to pass. That's the idea there. Now notice here, lest I should say, mine idol hath done them, and my graven image and my molten image hath commanded them. Right? So God's still challenging the idols, resting his claim to soul deity on his ability to declare future at the present. And I think that's one of the greatest arguments for the existence of God and the inspiration of the Bible, and that God is. I don't think there's a strong one except the resurrection of Christ. Those two fulfill prophecy. The resurrection of Christ and the heaven, the natural creation. Those three things are the great testimonies to God. All right? Thou hast heard it. Behold all this. And ye, will you not declare it? Why won't you declare what I said? Now, no, I have showed thee new things from this time, even hidden things which thou hast not known. Now, what are those going to be? I think that's the coming of Christ. I think now that I'm going to tell it because he does. I already mentioned it a number of times, the seventh. But now in the 49th chapter, in the 50th chapter, in the 53rd chapter, and in the 61st chapter, on and on here, in the rest of this book, he's telling them the various aspects of the servant when he comes, and the various aspects of the kingdom, Mount Zion, when it comes. So that I'm going to tell you new things now, that when they come to pass, you may know that I said, that Christ should have been. That should have been the convincing evidence to the Jews when Christ came. How he so completely fulfilled Scripture. That's what Paul did in our morning lesson in Acts. If Paul went into these cities, why, he first showed them how that the Messiah must suffer. He wasn't coming as they were expecting him to. He must suffer, be killed and raised from the dead. Then he shows them that Jesus Christ has fulfilled that. And they couldn't accept it. They still haven't accepted it. And yet, to look at what God said in Isaiah, I didn't have another book in the Old Testament than the prophet of Isaiah, and come over here and look at Christ, I would believe that he is the Son of God. I believe that God is, and God revealed these things. Great evidence. So he says here, from this time, even hidden things which thou hast not known. That is, Christ, the church, the new order, new heaven to the new earth. He's going to tell them all about that. We'll be noticing that we'll go along. Let's try to remember this. Here are the new things he's going to reveal. They are created now, that is, in his own mind, a determination, and not from of old. And before this day thou heardest them not, lest thou should say, behold, I knew them. I'm telling you that they were in God's mind, yes. But I'm now beginning to carry out what I've been intending and planning to do all of this time. When it comes to pass, you will know that I am, and I said it and your idols are nothing. Powerful argument. Yea, thou heardest not. Yea, thou knewest not. Yea, from of old thine ear was not open. For I knew that thou didst deal very treacherously, and was called a transgressor from the womb. From the very beginning of Israel's history, they've been a transgressor. The boys, Jacob's boys were transgressors, and the nation, when they went down into Egypt and came out of Egypt, they turned to idolatry over and over again, transgressing and rejecting the law of God. Always done that. Still do. Haven't changed. You ever thought, I know you have because I've mentioned it. You ever thought about that as an argument for the fact that Jesus Christ, the fact that God could bring his son into the world through a people as rebellious as the Jews were? I think that proved the deity, the existence of God and the deity of Christ. The fact that God could bring him into the world through the Jewish nation. Rebellious, idolatrous, all the way through. Yet he did it in spite of that. You're a transgressor from the womb. All right, so here then, very treacherously, was called transgressor from the womb. For my name's sake will I defer mine anger, and for my praise will I refrain for thee, that I cut thee not off. Now why? Why not cut off? Because you're going to bring the Messiah through. Not till I bring the Christ into the world will I cut you off, and renounce you, reject you, and cast you completely off. And when Christ came and they crucified him, God destroyed Jerusalem, he had completely cast the Jews off. The only hope they have is that the individual will obey the gospel of Christ. And you'll find very few of them that ever do it. Now, some of them are accepting the Zionistic movement, because that just falls right into the old Jewish concept of what God was going to do with Jews in Jerusalem. That's all it is. That's a revamping of Judaism, the Zionistic movement is. What? Because my own honor and what I said I would do, I'll defer my anger and not cut thee off. Behold, I refined thee, but not as silver. I have chosen thee in the furnace of affliction. That is, I yet I find them but dross. So I'm not refining you as silver, a blast that completely melts you, but I am trying to refine you in the furnace of affliction. Not as you would silver, completely burning. For mine own sake, and that's for emphasis. That's for repetition and for emphasis. For mine own sake will I do it. For how should my name be profaned, and my glory will I not give to another? In other words, now just suppose that God just completely destroyed them and swept them or felt like he wanted to back there with Moses. Moses prayed with him, don't do it. He didn't. But I suppose I should do that. And those promises would fail. God's honor would be tarnished. And so, no, I'm going to tolerate you. I'm going to put up with you. I'm going to refine you in the furnace of affliction. I'm going to send you into Babylonian captivity. I'm going to put you under foreign nations until Jesus, my son, comes, the servant comes. And then when he comes and you reject him as you have me, then I'm going to bring you to an end. I'm going to destroy Jerusalem. I'm going to cast you out. And you no longer will have any relation to me except individuals. And that's all, the individual. And of course, they're still separate people because God said he'd never bring them to a full end. Well, let me move on further now. And all right, verse 12. Hearken unto me, O Jacob, and Israel my called. I am he, I am the first, I also am the last. That is, God is the beginning and God is the end. I was there when all things had their beginning. I'll be there when all things are brought to an end. And he's also around all the time in between the first and the last, the beginning and the end. He's still controlling and carrying out his purpose. So now hearken unto me. Now back here in verse 1, he said, hear ye this, O house of Jacob and Israel. Now he said here in verse 2, hearken unto me, O Jacob and Israel, my called. I am he, I am the first, I also am the last. Yea, my hand hath laid the foundation of the earth, and my right hand hath spread out the heavens. When I call unto them, they stand up together. In other words, now God made his, laid the foundation of the earth, he stretched out the heavens, and when God speaks to them, they respond to it. They stand up together. Why did they do that? God has so controlled these nations. When he called upon Cyrus, he's going to stand up and answer the call. When he called them to let those people go back, well, first of all, when he called up on Babylon to carry them away captive, they're going to do that. When he called on Cyrus to bring Babylon to an end and let them go back, they're going to stand up and do that. So in other words, God is simply claiming, I made the heavens and the earth, and I call upon them to stand up. They stand up. And I call upon individuals to stand up. They don't stand up. That is chaos. He will, except he can't force the will. He doesn't make them do anything right or wrong. But when he uses a nation, he uses it. By the way, that leads me to a thought last Wednesday night that I intended to talk about back here in that 45th or 6th chapter. And God said there, he creates light and darkness, good and evil. Well, George asked me about that after, and I intend to talk about it. The evil there is not moral evil. Over in Amos, the 3rd chapter, and I think it's verse 7, he says a similar thing there. And he says in other places also, these two are sufficient. But now notice here in the 3rd chapter, our 1st chapter, the book of Amos, God says here, the 3rd chapter, in verse 7, verse 6, shall the trumpet be blown in a city, and the people not be afraid. Now that's the alarm of judgment. Shall evil befall a city, and Jehovah had not done it. There's the evil of judgment brought in response to the sounding of the trumpet. Now the same thing was true back here in chapter 45 and verse 7. I form the light and create darkness. I make peace and create evil. Now there is the evil of judgment over against the peace that he creates. It's not moral evil. He doesn't talk about God doesn't create any moral evil. But the evil that's talked about in these passages is the evil consequence of sin in the judgment that's brought upon the nation as a result of it. And I intended to say that last time. Let's slip my mind. So now he's known. I finish up my chapter here. Alright. And I'm dropping on down to verse 14. Assemble yourselves all ye and hear. Who among them hath declared these things? Who among the idols? Who among the nations? Who among these people have declared the things I'm declaring? I'm resting my claim to deity on my ability to declare the end from the beginning. He whom Jehovah loveth shall perform his pleasure on Babylon, and his arm shall be on the Chaldeans. Now he whom Jehovah loveth, now the love there is in the sense of using it. God loves him as one that he can use. He doesn't love him that in the sense that love that brings him redemption. But he loves him in the sense that I'm going to control him and direct him in it. Now that's still talking there about Cyrus. I notice, brethren, I have spoken. Yea, I called him, I brought him, and he shall make his way prosperous. And that's the last time I believe that he is mentioned in here. That's the last time Cyrus is mentioned in the book of Isaiah. All right? So, when God called, he's going to stand up. That's the point there. So, I'm going to use him. When I call him, he'll respond. Now, let's notice this next verse. This is more, a little more difficult. Come ye near unto me. Hear ye this. From the beginning, I have not spoken in secret. From the time that it was, there am I, and now the Lord Jehovah hath sent me and his Spirit. Now who is that? Isaiah and God's Spirit? Or is it the Messiah, the servant, and the Spirit? I think the servant, because the servant is the one, the central theme here of the whole book of Isaiah. What God is going to do through the servant, his son, the Messiah that shall come. And God sent him and sent his Spirit upon him. And I think that's what he told me. I have not spoken in secret from the time that it was, that is from the very beginning, there am I, talking to the prophets, revealing things, and now the Lord Jehovah has sent me in fulfillment of what he had begun in Genesis 3:15, where he put enmity between the woman and the serpent and the seed of the woman, right on down, the seed of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. He'd come right on down now, and the seed of David, he'd been developing that thought all the way through of the servant who was to come and of his Spirit that would be upon him. And so keep that in mind as we move on through the book and see these prophecies of the coming Son and servant and Spirit. I think we'll see that. So I think that's what he's talking about rather than of Isaiah and the Spirit. Right? Now, thus saith Jehovah, thy Redeemer, the Holy One of Israel, I am Jehovah thy God, who teacheth thee to profit, that is, profits you by what I teach thee, who leadeth thee by the way that thou shouldst go. Oh, that thou hearken to my commandment. Now listen. Oh, that thou hearken to my commandments. If they had listened to him from the first, how different it would be. If people listen to the Lord now, how different would it be? That's what he said. If you just listen, and oh, that you had hearkened to my commandments, then had thy peace, now notice what it would have had, then thy peace had been as a river, and thy righteousness as the waves of the sea. Thy seed also had been as the sand, and the offspring of thy bowels like the grains thereof. And forth, his name would not be cut off, nor destroyed from before him. Because we don't know just what all would have happened if the Jews had obeyed God and been faithful to him. But yes, the four things would have happened. Those four things, look at it again here. Your peace would have been as a river, and your righteousness as the waves of the sea. Your seed also had been as the sand, the offspring of our bowels, that the grains thereof. Forth, his name would not be cut off, nor destroyed from before him. At least that would have happened. And only a warning to us, should give heed to what he says, thy name be not cut off. Now the last thought. And here's the last mention of Babylon in the book of Isaiah. Go ye forth from Babylon, flee ye from the Chaldeans, with a voice of singing declare ye, tell this, utter it even to the end of the earth, say ye, Jehovah hath redeemed his servant Jacob. And that, you see, fits in with come out of Babylon, come on over to Revelation. Again, God says, come out from among the old my people, have no fellowship with the sin. When God is talking about that, he's really not talking about the city of Babylon or the city of Rome. He's talking about that which they represent, that for which they stand, sin, wickedness, the city of sin. Come out from that, God says. Come ye out from among them, be separate, saith the Lord. Touch no unclean thing, and I'll deceive you. 2 Corinthians 6. Right? He hath redeemed his servant. So now you're looking, you see, to the coming of the one up here in verse 17. The Lord has sent me in his spirit. Now through them, he will have redeemed and will redeem his people. So he's not talking about something that's already done, but he's talking about something that will be done as sure as if it were already done. God's word never fails. And they thirsted not when he led them through the deserts. He caused the waters to flow out of the rock fall. He clave the rock also, and the waters gushed out. There's no record of that having happened on their return from Babylon. I don't think he's talking about that. I think what he's saying is that when God calls and we respond, that God is able to lead us through the deserts of life, through the trials and the obstacles, and bring us through triumphantly unto himself. He will provide for our spiritual needs. I think he's talking spiritually. Maybe I see too much of the spiritual in Isaiah, but I don't think so. I think I see what Isaiah is talking about. I think that's what he's trying to present here, is that the flesh of Jesus in the flesh popped his metal. The Spirit giveth life. The words that I say unto you, they are spirit. They are life. That's the real thing all the way through. And here's the physical over here symbolizing, looking under the spiritual, but it's in the spiritual we find our true religion. Not finding. And the thirst is not here. There is no peace, saith Jehovah, to the wicked. Now over against these whom Jehovah redeemed. And notice up here, that peace up here, when he says of that peace, then is a river. But there's no peace for the wicked. How true then? How true now? People today, rebellion against God, are finding no peace. We pray for peace and that the world will not fight. I think it's rather a foolish prayer, personally. I know we want that. What's the real peace we should be praying for? That spiritual peace that passes understanding. And you can have no war. We may not be at war right now, but there's still no peace. There is no peace for the wicked. Don't misunderstand. I don't see it in war at all. I don't see it either. But my point is, there is no peace for the wicked, but for the righteous. Peace is as a river, as Paul said, passes understanding. And that's not just not shooting somebody. That's a different time. So that's a good place to stop. And Jehovah said, and the wicked. Oh, any question you want to ask? I might have overlooked something else that I should have talked about, like I did last time on that evil. Any question? Well, if not, we begin a new section next time. Now, in this section, more concern is given to the servant who is to come and to the spiritual Zion. The last section is 8 and 9 chapters, dealt with the Babylonian captivity and the return from there. Now that we're dealing more in the next with the spiritual redemption in the next 9 chapters. Okay, well, the class is this group. It's best to stop right there.